Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Unstoppable Stories Show with Terrence Leftridge, where we talk to ordinary people with unstoppable stories. Now here's your host, life accountability coach, Terrence Leftridge.
Hey, 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 it's an unstoppable day, and it's a great time for the Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Leftridge. Welcome to the Unstoppable Story Show on another Tuesday night. Glad you are here. I know you could be anywhere else in the world watching anything else, but thank you for spending a little bit of time and choosing to make the Unstoppable Story Show your destination for Tuesday nights. If you're watching on Facebook Live right now, hello, come on in, share the broadcast, share some likes. If you are listening on blogtalkradio.com/unstoppable stories, then go ahead and share this broadcast with somebody else who might be listening on their way home from work or who might just be sitting in their living room listening to internet radio. Thank you so much. I'm Terrence, the Unstoppable Coach Leftridge, as always your host and your life accountability coach with unstoppablecoaching.com, where we help you create your vision, implement your vision, and more importantly, hold you accountable to making your dreams a reality. And we do that through this show, the Unstoppable Story Show, where we give exposure to the ordinary people who have those unstoppable stories. We know that anywhere to get your story out there into the masses, it takes money. It takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of connections, and it takes a lot of networking. So we use the Unstoppable Story Show as a low-cost alternative to help you get your message out there to the masses, because we believe that your message may be the aspirin for someone's headache. Your message may be the thing that takes somebody's mess and turns it into their best. Your message may literally change or save somebody's life. So we open our platform to allow you to have your testimony, to have your share your message, and to help people go to the next level of their greatness. How you guys doing tonight out there in Facebook land? How you, and out there in Blog Talk Radio? I hope you had a fabulous weekend. I had a fabulous weekend. It was my birthday weekend. Just celebrated another year of living this unstoppable life and had a good time here in the city of Chicago. The weather was beautiful. It was in the 70s at the beginning of April, and it was sunny. Who could ask for anything more? And I also had the opportunity to continue to share my story with the masses and continue to allow people to share their story. And I'm so blessed to be able to be going along the journey with a great group of people here in the Chicagoland area that are working with children with autism. And, you know, we had a great show last night with the Dynamic Autism Dads. And if you missed if you don't know who they are, then you need to go back and listen to last week's Unstoppable Story Show, because we had five powerful gentlemen on the show talk real talk about autism from a dad's point of view. Shout out to Carlos Payne. Shout out to Joe Jackson. Shout out to Carrie Brooks. Shout out to Danny Randall. And shout out to the elder statesman, Paul Butler, for doing a great job, not only on the Unstoppable Story Show last week, but on WVON Radio, the talk of Chicago, here last night with Chat Daddy. Shout out to Art Chat Daddy Sims, for opening up his platform to allow these gentlemen to really talk frankly, talk real, talk from the heart about their journey on raising their kids who are dealing with autism or who have been diagnosed with the autism spectrum disorder. I'm learning a lot just hanging out and being allowed to be upon this journey. As you guys know, I don't have kids, but I have been surrounded by kids in my personal life, in my work life, and I've had the opportunity to work with special need kids in some of my stops along my work life and my adult life. But it's always good to get more information. It's always good to know more about the people within the community that you live, because we all live in this one big community, and we all need to learn how to communicate with each other, how to get along with each other, how to understand each other so that this world can truly be a better place. And we've got some great, 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 great guests tonight that are doing that on a daily basis and showing other people how to do that. I call them the motivated moms. You know, last week we had the dynamic autism dads. I can't say the motivated autism moms because that doesn't spell moms. It spells ma'ams, and I didn't want to go there. So we're just going to go with the motivated moms. We've got three lovely ladies here in the Chicagoland area and representing Northwest Indiana that are working with autism and sharing their journey about autism from their perspective so that we can get the balance of what's happening with the autism spectrum disorder from both sides of the coin. So we are going to just introduce them and open up their mics and get right into this conversation. But I want to shout out to Harold Hughes, who's watching from Springfield, Illinois. I want to shout out to author Maria Vega. She's watching us from Texas. Definitely, you guys, show some hearts, show some love. There's going to be some great conversation tonight. And go ahead, please share this with anybody else that you know that might like this type of programming, who might be interested in learning more about special needs children, learning more about autism, learning more about getting the information that you need so that you can communicate and collaborate and live in this community with other people and other families. So without further ado, let's do some introductions and then we will bring them all into the mic. First of all, we've got Kimberly Johnson Evans. Kimberly, she's the proud mother of William Beckford. He's age 24, and he was diagnosed with ASD, the autism spectrum disorder, at the age of 6. Through advocacy for William, she has gained knowledge and skill sets as an advocate, due process, and an IEP, Individualized Education Plan liaison, and is well-versed in the Department of Human Service waiver programs, as well as options for the Legis consent decree. She works as the Legis family advocate at the Arc of Illinois, which is a nonprofit organization. And for the last 5 years, she has served as the board president of the Chicagoland Autism Connection Family Professional Support Group here in Chicago. It's an organization that has been involved in the fight for autism for over 12 years. And it was originally known as the Southside Chicago Support Group, the Chicago Southside Support Group, but now is known as the Chicagoland Autism Connection. So we are going to open up her mic and welcome on to the show Kimberly Johnson Evans. Kimberly, are you on the call?
I'm here. Good evening, Terrence. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Good, good, good. Well, thank you for being on the show. So let's just take a couple of minutes and tell us about your journey with autism from your motivated mom point of view. But as always, I'm going to ask each of our ladies, what does it mean to you to be unstoppable as an autism mom?
Okay. Well, let me just make one correction. So CAC is celebrating their 20th year this year, Chicagoland Autism. I've just been involved with the organization for 12 years.
Okay.
So
reading too fast with my old eyes.
That's okay. Well, let me tell you a little bit about my journey. So William, who is an amazing, handsome, talented, creative, and all that other good stuff, he is a super White Sox fan. He's 24 years old, and he was diagnosed at age 6. And I started to notice something was going on with William at about around the age of three. But in the early 90s, there was not as much out there for support for autism as there is now. And William, 6 years old, is pretty late for a diagnosis. But he was actually receiving some support services prior to, just because I knew as a mom that there was something, you know, not there yet. So speech therapy and some other things he was receiving prior to. And his official diagnosis came in at age 6. And so our journey right now, like I said, we've been through the education system. We've been through early education. William has exceeded my expectations as far as where he would go academically. He is a recent college graduate of Lincoln College last May, where he received an Associate of Science degree.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm very proud, and you can imagine how it was when he walked across that stage, just thinking about where we started from and where we are now. So what does it mean for me to be unstoppable as a mom? As a mom, it means that I never took no for an answer. My goal in this journey was always for William to reach his full potential, whatever that was. Didn't know at the time where that would lead us, but just for him to reach his full potential. So I explored every training, every opportunity, and I became, of course, is not only his biggest fan, his biggest advocate. And so that's where we are now.
I love it. We're going to come back to something that you said in your presentation that really stuck with me, but congratulations to William for graduating, you said, with an associate's degree, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. That is fabulous. Well, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. We are going to move along to our next guest. So our next guest was, she's originally from Chicago, but Terra Poetry in Motion is in Gary, Indiana now, her home since 2015. She moved to Gary to help rebuild the city within each community by joining forces with the National Block Club University. She's forever a mentor and an advocate for the community, especially those with disabilities and special needs. She is a mother of two. Her son, his name is Sean T, and he is 28. And in addition to being a mother of two, she's a radio host on a radio station, WGVE in Gary, Indiana, a spoken word artist, an actress, and she's been published 4 times in different anthologies. And she also was the Teresa Mathis honoree by National Lewis University in 2010. And she represented NLU 3 years in a row at Columbia College's annual National Undergraduate Poetry Festival. She is a powerhouse. She has great energy. She has great spoken words. And she is a good friend of mine and the Unstoppable Story Show. So let's welcome into the call Terra Poetry in Motion. Terra, are you on the call?
Hi, Terra. Yes, I am. How are you?
I am unstoppable. How about you?
Oh, same here, unstoppable. As you can tell, I'm a little bit hoarse, but hey, I'm here. I'm moving.
Yeah, you've probably been out there speaking that spoken word all week long, right?
I wish that was the case. I will be next week, though.
Okay. So, Terra, just like I asked Kim, tell us your journey with autism, but also let us know, what does it mean to you to be unstoppable as an autism mom?
Well, first of all, as Kim mentioned earlier about there not being very much support in the 90s, definitely I experienced that with my son, Sean T. We call him Sean most of the time. But actually, Sean did not get his diagnosis until he was 18. And that's because due to me having to fight family, having to fight the school system, and not getting the support that I needed from the doctors, I did notice things that were going on with him when he was around 2 or 3. But I didn't know anything about autism. No one really said anything to me about autism. And actually, his doctor said, doctors don't like to make the diagnosis of autism unless we absolutely have to. And even at that point when he said that to me, it still didn't click that that's what my son has, especially because I didn't know anything about it, and I had no one to guide me or help me with that until I met Anita Johnson, who was then like my rock of Gibraltar, and she helped me with that. But it was a process. Sean didn't get diagnosed until he was 18 because I kept pushing and trying to figure out and find out what was going on with my son. So I had to learn a lot along the way. So it was a journey for both of us. And just before he graduated from high school, when I found out that CPS had an autism department downtown, when I called him up and said, hey, I've suspected for the longest that my son has autism, but he has an IEP and case manager, and they're not listening to me. So that was completely unacceptable to them. So then the autism department downtown got involved, as well as the school psychologist, and they did separate evaluations on Sean, and their summary reports were practically identical. And they both said that Sean has Asperger's syndrome, which puts him on the higher functioning end of the spectrum of the autism spectrum. But in the meantime, that meant that all those years in between, there were a lot of doors closed to him. There were a lot of doors closed to me. And I can remember one day making 32 phone calls in one day looking for programs to assist him, to help him, or something to put him in. And either he was too old or too young or was not severe enough. So that was really motivation for me to go into education. So I actually decided to go into teaching because of both of my sons and because of the experience that I had with the school system. And while I've done some teaching, my focus now has really become on being an advocate for people with disabilities, which prompted me to create Poetic Innovations, which provides resources to people with disabilities as well as their families. So I don't provide the resources directly unless I have them, but primarily I connect them with resources or people who can help them with that, because I found that that's a very big need, and that includes assisting parents or guardians or families with walking them through the IEP process or the 504 plan or explaining it to them. And I've had some teachers and principals say, hey, thank you, that's a great thing, we need that because we don't have time to sit down and explain every detail to them, and it helps ease the process for us. So my job is not to make the school, anyone in the school, an enemy. It's actually to make the process easier for everyone involved. So, and
I love
the question about what, thank you, and what does
Go
it
ahead.
Mean to me being unstoppable autism mom? Well, it means never giving up. It means when you know in your heart that something is going on or something is not right and your child needs you, whether you like it or not, do it, because they're the one that's going to pay for it if you don't do it. It means being the biggest advocate possible, regardless of what you wanted, what you expect, what you would like it or not. That's your child. You're the very first person that they come depend on, and you should be the biggest advocate out there for them.
You
so
know
that,
what?
That's what it means for me to be unstoppable.
I love it. I thank you so much. Man, you guys are pretty much saying the same thing. You know, never give up. Be unstoppable. Do it, whether you like it or not. I like the way you put that. So thank you, Tara, for being on the show. And we're going to come back to you as well once we introduce our third guest to the show. And just want to let everybody know that this show is usually an hour, but we have scheduled it for 90 minutes because I know this conversation is going to get good. So definitely get you your good libation, get you your pen, get you your paper. Someone texted me today when I did a Facebook Live about the show tonight. They wanted to get more information. They wanted to connect with our guests. So we're going to make sure our guests give their information out to you so that you can follow up with them. If you suspect that a child in your family may have autism, has not gotten diagnosed yet, maybe you are afraid to go get that diagnosis because you don't want to hear what some people consider a death sentence, this is the place for you to be tonight. Get the information, get the support you need, and then go do it, whether you like it or not. So our third guest tonight is Deborah Vines. She is the founder and CEO of the Answer Inc. Autism Awareness and Support Agency. Deborah Vines and her husband Harlan, 33 years, have two children, Mark and Jason. Jason is now 29 and was diagnosed with autism when he was just 18 months old, thus beginning their journey. As a mother with a son with autism, she understands the joy, pain, and frustration that can mount with having a child that has special needs. In response to her own questions and her need for support, she founded The Answer Inc. in 2007, a not-for-profit organization that assists parents and caregivers in navigating through the systems of social services and academic institutions by providing case management, referral services, recreation, and resources for families with individuals having autism or other developmental disorders. Now, she's got a long list of awards that she's received. She just recently received an award this weekend at the Black Women's Expo here in Chicago. So I'm going to let her share that information with you guys. But she is a great friend that I met through social media. Our paths continue to cross month after month, and she's just doing great things in the Chicagoland area and in the western suburbs. So let's welcome into the call my friend Deborah Vines of The Answer Inc. Deborah, are you on the call?
I am. Good evening, everyone.
Hey, Deborah. How are you?
I am unstoppable.
You know what? You got the tagline. All right. See, you're just trying to get all the brownie points. Back. I might have to read some more of this bio just as you said that. How you doing?
I'm great. I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you so much for being
on the show. I feel blessed, actually, to be in the company of two great women. You guys have some amazing stories.
Well, you know, I try to put great people together because iron sharpens iron. And if anyone's going to sharpen some irons tonight, it's going to be you and what you've been doing in the cause for autism awareness, not just in the month of April, but year after year after year. So, Deborah, go ahead and add on to what I've already read in your bio about your journey with autism. And then also, same question to you. What does it mean to you to be unstoppable as an autism mom?
Okay. Well, my journey began, like my bio said, when Jason was 18 months old. Jason would wake us up every morning with just banging pots and pans. And one morning, the house was completely quiet. So my husband said, Jason has overslept. And so I went downstairs. His room was downstairs. And he was sitting in the middle of the floor. He was totally lethargic. So I shook him. I called his name, and he was just looking straight ahead. So my husband said, let's take him to the hospital. We took him to the hospital, and I think it was after about a couple of hospital visits. And the doctor said that he has autism. And the only thing that we had ever heard about remotely about autism was the movie Rain Man. Jason was 18 months old. Rain Man was an adult. So, again, we took him to another therapist. The therapist said, again, he has autism. There, our journey began. Living in an underserved community, it really was very challenging. I mean, for many, many years. We had to go to the south suburbs, to the western suburbs, just to be able to get supportive services, not to mention services for Jason. I mean, as it relates to even him being in a good school. But the journey was really, really challenging because we went through Jason going through really bad behavior as far as self-mutilation, biting himself, hitting his head against the wall. We went through a myriad of emotions with medication modification.
and a lot of things. But right now I can say that Jason is a very easygoing young man. He's in a day program. He's very happy. He is the social media guru. I think I'm going to get him his own Facebook page because everybody loves Jason. Because
I
started taking him to board meetings and things like that because I just wanted the community to see that having a child with autism was nothing to be ashamed of. So that's my story.
I love it. And you know what, Jason, is I love what you do with Jason. I love how you allow him to just be Jason and how you allow him to just interact and the spirit comes out of him and the energy comes out of him, especially on Sunday morning. I'm like, he going to direct the whole choir before it's all over with. So you do a great job with him. So thank you so much for being on the call. You guys, you are listening to and watching The Unstoppable Story Show with Terrence Leftridge. We are talking to motivated moms as we continue to talk about autism awareness in this month of April. If you guys want to join the conversation and ask questions or give comments to these great women who are doing great things in the Chicagoland area, here's the number, 323-870-3764. 323-870-3764. Shout out to Zelina Jones who's watching us on Facebook. Shout out to Tavia Free Spirit, one of the bold, baddest personal assistants out there with Bling 10 Personal Assistants and a sponsor of the Unstoppable Story Show. Thank you so much for continuing to watch and to sponsor this great show. So let's open up everybody's mic and let's do some round table conversations. Just throw some questions out there, get some perspective. As you guys know, I got a chance to interview the Dynamic Autism Advocacy Dads over the past few weeks and had some great conversation, had some great questions, and they gave some great feedback. So what I want to talk about because of you ladies, all of your sons are adults now. So let's roll it back to the 90s when you first got the diagnosis, and let's talk about the state of autism awareness at that time and how you feel like either it has changed, gotten better, or gotten worse in 2017. Why don't we just work our way backwards? Let's start with you, Deborah, and then we'll talk to Tara and talk to Kim about that same question. Tell us about the state of autism back in the 90s and how it's evolved in 2017.
Well, I was living in an underserved community, so it was absolutely horrible. It was absolutely horrible. As I stated earlier, I had to go to communities just to be able to get services, and you had to, you know, opposed to now, you can get things a little bit easier. They have safety programs before round the cut everything, but it was really bad when Jason first got diagnosed. Anybody that I ever talked to that had a child with autism, they had this great insurance that they can go to and get ABA services. They can get the extra speech pathology. Even in the schools, Jason was in a multicultural classroom, and so it wasn't just an autism classroom, so he wasn't getting the services that he needed, right, even in school. So it was very, very challenging, and I really didn't even realize and wasn't even educated enough on the system to know just what to do. So I was actually walking in the blind. They didn't have all the resources that they have right now. You know, you find out your child has autism when the numbers were 1 in 1,000 then. Now they're 1 in 68. So the first thing I did was call the Autism Society. The Autism Society sent me a pamphlet. I went through the pamphlet, and I tried to do everything that was in the pamphlet. I didn't have anyone to walk the journey with me opposed to now. I wish that it was an Answer Incorporated or a CAC when Jason first got diagnosed, because he probably would be further along than he is right now. But as to now, there are services, many more services that are available right now opposed to when Jason got diagnosed.
Thank you. Tara, You started in Chicago. You've moved to Northwest Indiana. Tell us from your perspective, and you mentioned it a little bit in your opening, the state of autism when your son first got, well, not even when he first got diagnosed, but when you were thinking about it, because 18 years went by before he got the official diagnosis. So tell us about the state when you first started recognizing it in Sean.
Well, they never did. It was me. It was when I decided to go to school for teaching, I was the one who figured out what Sean had. And it was with the support of Anita Johnson, who was a parent advocate. She was a very big support for me, and she encouraged me all the way. And any questions that I had, I was able to direct them to her because I felt like I had no one else to turn to because doctors weren't listening to me or they weren't really helping. Family was fighting me on it because they thought I was just being an overprotective mom. And I just had no support on it. Even his father was like, well, no, you just imagine things that's all in your head. You know, you started pulling the wool over your eyes. No, he's not. No, you just imagining things. So I got anything but support except from Anita and except for one teacher. And that was, two teachers. Two of his teachers in grammar school, that was Ms. Clark, his resource teacher, because I did, the one thing I was able to get along with Anita's support was an IEP. I finally got an IEP for him in grammar school, and then it carried over to high school, but that didn't solve the problem, especially at the school level, especially because during high school, for the entire 4 years of high school, he had a case manager and an assistant case manager, and they both ignored me when I kept saying that I suspect my son has autism. But when they were finally faced with that, you know, with undeniable proof from two professionals, from two different, you know, one from the school and one from CPS downtown department, you know, then his case manager said, oh, wow, Mom, you did say that, didn't you? And my response to her was, duh, you think? You know, so, but it was very frustrating because, and when I started to doubt and question myself, Anita said to me, don't you dare do that because you were the one who made his diagnosis, not the doctors, not the teachers, not the professionals, no one. You made that diagnosis, and I made that diagnosis because I decided to go to school to become a teacher, and when I had to take a special education class, I decided to do my assignment on PPD, PPD, Pervasive Pragmatic Disorders. And I knew that autism fell under that umbrella. So, and I kind of narrowed it down while I did, you know, the whole thing. I also narrowed it down to autism because I had plenty of questions, and that gave me an excuse to do the research. And I can remember being on my living room floor with about 12 to 15 different books on the subject. And I finally narrowed it down to four books, and I was comparing notes between each one of them, and I said, this has got to be it because he fits. And that's when I learned that there is no actual test for autism, but there's a criteria that you go by.
Okay.
And, you know, just as Deborah mentioned, you know, the Rain Man, for me, it was, I think it was a Bruce Willis movie. I cannot think, the name of the movie escapes me at the moment, but I remember he was protecting a little boy in that movie who had autism. And I remember sitting in the movie theater. Yes, thank you. You know, it's the first time I've ever forgotten the name of that movie. But I remember sitting in the movie theater with tears running down my face because I felt like I was looking at my son. And it was like there was no question in my mind that I had to be on the right path then. So I just kept pushing. All I wanted was answers so I knew how to help my son. And as far as the difference, what I see now is that years ago, you know, there was very little awareness about autism. And, you know, like Deborah mentioned, you know, I think it was like 1 in 1,000, and now it's 1 in 65 or something like that. To me, I don't think that the number is actually increasing the cases. I think it's just more awareness. And all of those kids who and adults who did not get diagnosed before, now they're getting diagnosed, so they're projecting it as if there's a rise in autism when there really isn't. If there is, it's only because there are more kids that are being born, and there could be several factors as to why that is, but I don't think that the whole case is simply because all of a sudden there's an increase in the numbers. No, I think maybe there's an increase in the awareness of it, and there are preventive measures for available now, whereas those opportunities and those avenues were not available to moms like us during the 90s, maybe even the early 2000s, because I never did get the assistance that I needed for Sean. It was me just being determined to figure out how to help him, because even teachers in grammar school, his seventh grade teacher said, she was very honest, and I appreciated her honesty when she said, I don't know how to teach him. I am not trained for this. And actually, that was the best hope that she could have given me by just being that honest with me.
And you know what? You made a great point, and I was gonna circle back to that after everybody said something. But that number that Deborah threw out earlier, back in the 90s, 1 in 1,000, and now 1 in 68. You know, that's exactly what I was thinking. It was probably because, you know, now there's more awareness about it, and now there's more information about it. So maybe a lot of people have now had the same similar story that you are sharing, where it took 18 years for someone to really step out and really say with authority that this is what it is. And now families across the country and maybe across the globe are now getting that diagnosis, sometimes too little too late, but they're getting that diagnosis. So that's
right.
A great observation that you made. Let me move on to Kim. Same question. From your perspective, what was the state of autism when you first got the diagnosis of your son, and how do you think things have changed, better or worse, in 2017?
Okay. Well, William, it was really difficult back in the 90s. There was really nothing available in our community. Let me put it that way. There were things available, but they were in the northern suburbs and far out, and getting the diagnosis for William was very difficult. Actually, in order to get the diagnosis, I went through a great difficulty because William, at that time, there was the word high and low functioning. You know what that means? And
yeah.
I don't use those words anymore because high in my mind indicates good and low indicates bad. And I don't think that's our kids at all. I think that our kids, that's why we have the spectrum. The spectrum is because our kids are on a spectrum. They all have great strengths and great challenges that they have to work on. So I don't use that anymore. But William, actually, in order for me to get the diagnosis, it was so funny, he was diagnosed at the University of Chicago through Dr. Thomas Blondes. And Dr. Blondes at that time had a waiting list of 8 months. And I, again, not being going back to my original statement of being unstoppable, Sarah,
okay.
I actually said, you know what, 8 months, I can't wait 8 months. I can't wait 8 months. So not waiting 8 months, I actually sent a letter to them in colored paper every week until they gave me an appointment. And that's how I got in to see Dr. Blondes. And William was originally diagnosed with pervasive development disorder, which is called PDD, which is still
right
on the autism spectrum. So then we moved to elementary school. His kindergarten teacher was the one who made me aware that William was exhibiting signs of autism. And, of course, that was foreign to me. What does that mean, et cetera? You know, I was nervous, of course, frustrated, scared, not knowing what to do. And to look up autism at that time, I think Deborah put it in perspective when she said, you know, I contacted Autism Society. They sent me a pamphlet and said, okay, you know, this is what we have on autism. And
wow.
I actually went through a due process at Williams School. And due process is when you don't agree with the child's setting. William was in a cross-cat classroom, and a cross-cat classroom includes everyone, people who are vision impaired, hearing impaired, autistic, and the likes. And unfortunately, that placement was not conducive to William's needs, but the school was, you know, telling me this was the best they could do. So then I found out that there were other placements, but they were in places where I didn't live. And the school system at that time was not willing to offer those placements to me. So I moved. And I said, I'm now here in this place. So, hey, you know, can you take them now? And actually, you know, that was probably one of the greatest moves that I made, to move to a district where they did have a autism placement, where there were women who were trained in autism, because they were few and far between at that time. And William started there. He was in a full inclusion. Inclusion means that he stays in that classroom the whole day.
Okay.
He then moved, as he progressed, then he moved to what they call the pullout. And that's when William started going to certain classes, you know, with his peers who were non-disabled. And so, you know, I just think that was a great move. And I was just so happy to have the support. I think a little different than Tara was saying. You know, my family, you know, at first they did think I was a little, you know, overprotective. But once I still, you know, I kept pushing, like, there's something not right. There's something not right. My family, being the supportive family that they are, came to IEPs with me. They researched with me. And, you know, I was just grateful to have them. Along with his dad. His dad was awesome in supporting me when, you know, all of this diagnosis came about. So moving forward, as William has gone through the school system, you know, he's progressed. Sometimes we take two steps forward and two steps back. But, you know, ultimately he's been pushing forward. But as far as resources and things being available, the great news for me is that CAC, Chicagoland Autism Connection, was a family support group that I reached out to that was started by two women who at the same time had found out that their children were autistic, and they were tired of going to Evanston and to Naperville and Bolingbrook to get information. So they started their own support group. And I was that parent in the support group crying and telling my story and, you know, getting support. And the great news about Chicagoland Autism is not only did we have parents, but professionals were our members of the organization. And I was able to connect with them to get additional resources for William. So as I wrap up, just saying that resources now, I think they're available in droves. Now the hard part is navigating to see, you know, where you go for services, like what do you get? But then there's also the challenge of the financial crisis. Many parents can't afford some of the services that are available. And unfortunately, with our state and the budget and things that are going on, you know, it's just not we haven't come to the point where we're solving the problem of getting the services and support that we need for our children.
Wow, thank you for sharing that information. That's great information. All three of you guys, you know, really are talking about the state of where autism was versus where it is right now. Sounds like it's definitely gotten better. There's more resources out there, but there still are some challenges that go along with the daily understanding and the daily dealing with raising children on the that have autism or have been diagnosed with autism. So I want to ask this question, and I know it may be forcing you to.
Excuse me. Before you ask your next question, I just wanted to thank Kim for clearing that up. You know, I always get that mixed up. Jason was also in a cross-category classroom, and that's one of the biggest problems with families. Is that they really just take the school's word and, you know, whatever they say, they go along with it and they don't fight it. They don't research. They look for the information. You know, we feel like these people are professionals and they say, okay, well, you know, Jason's in his classroom or William's in this classroom and we just go along with it. But you have to do research. And for any parent that's out there listening, don't take what your teachers say at face value. Do your own research.
Absolutely.
The parents that are on this land right now, and we are unstoppable because we are superwomen. We did not stop with our children because we did not just take what the teacher said at face value.
And, you know,
thank
that's what I love about
thank you.
That's what I love about each one of you, and thank you for pulling that in. That was actually going to be the segue into the next question. But you're right, you know, and
what I love when I hear you guys and when I hear the dynamic autism dads and they're talking, what I recognize is that outsiders think that there's some extra things, or there's some different things, or there's some astronomical things that you need to do in raising your children because they have special needs. And I don't discount that there may be times that there are more things that you have to do. But here's the point. The common sense things that you do with your children are the common sense things that everybody needs to do with their children. Don't trust what the teacher is saying. Do your own research. Don't just take a diagnosis at face value. Get a second opinion. If there's something you don't understand with what someone is saying to you about your child, whether your child is atypical or typical, you don't stop right there. You keep going because, you know, my mom used to say, no one's going to take care of yours like you.
Here's the thing, too. And, you know, just to add on to that, you know, a lot of families are, I'm not going to use the word lazy, but we get complacent. And it's not just with the teachers, it's with the doctors, too. You know, they want to load all this medication. And I'm not saying that I'm not a proponent for medication because Jason is on medication. So along with that statement I just made, not just the teachers, the doctors as well.
Right.
Absolutely. And then I just want to add on to that, Deborah, as far as, you know, just not, you know, accepting something, we know when you're a mom, and I'm not going to exclude the dads, but I'm just going to say moms because that's the perspective I can speak from. When you're a mom, you know, when something's not right, you know when there's something not right from the very beginning of your child. You know when that classroom setting is not right. You know. So you have to trust your instincts when it comes to your child. Because if no one else is going to advocate for your child, you are.
Exactly. Yep. And that's the reason why I started Poetic Innovations, because I've had some parents that I've had meetings with, and they have a child. You know, there was a mom who has an autistic son. He's fairly young. And then there was a grandfather whose child is not diagnosed as having autism, and I don't think he does have it. But what I told him, it's not so much about the diagnosis, it's about the fact that your child or your grandson has an IEP, and you need to be knowledgeable about what that IEP says and why it's there. You can't just take it and I really frustrated him because he took it for granted that his grandson had an IEP and the school and the teachers and everyone knew what was best. So I'm like, no, you need to know what this means. You need to know what it means for you. You need to know what it means for your grandson. So you're not being an advocate if you're just taking this at face value and taking everybody's word for it, because you really don't have a clue as to what's going on, and that's not good. So
That's the perfect example of parents just taking face value of what teachers and doctors say. And that's why Kimberly and I are going to start an advocacy class. She don't know it yet. I just told her.
I hear.
No opportunity.
You know, we both, in our respective agencies, we always have professionals come in and talk about different things with the families. You know, I think we've covered everything from ABA therapy to behavior to therapy to play therapy and everything else. But I think this is something that we really need to collaborate on and get these parents truly educated with advocacy classes.
Definitely, because they need to know their child's rights and they need to know their rights. And if you don't know your rights, then you're bound to get the wool pulled over your eyes.
Well, that's so true, Tara. And just going back to when we talk about being in the IEP, the individual education plan, when you're sitting in that room, a lot of times we trust the, you know, educators in the room, which, you know, a lot of times the educators get a bad rap, you know. They are there to help. They are there to support. But it's your job as the parent to be informed and to be knowledgeable of the process and what's occurring so that you can support this plan. A lot of times we sit in that room and we just are, you know, at the table and not really participating. And so that's what I do a lot when I go to IEPs, to help the parent be a participant in the process.
And you know what?
You know,
that, let me jump in, Deborah, because that's a point that came up at the CAC event Spring Fling when we had the breakout group with the Dynamic Autism Dads, the IEP in that room. From a mom's perspective, how do you three feel, or how did you feel when you were in that room with the IEP? There was a lady that was in the audience that talked about the IEP experience and how she took a man with her because she felt like she wasn't getting the respect that she needed in that room when she was there by herself. So briefly, tell us one of your experiences. Go ahead,
here's
Deborah.
The thing. When all of our children were going through IEPs, just, you know, think back, you know, we got a 24-year-old, 29, 28-year-old. We didn't know that we had an advocate with us. We didn't know. So one thing that I've gotten the school system to change in District 89 is because I cried at each and every one of Jason's IET meetings. I sat there and I cried like a baby because I kept hearing them say, well, he can't do. He didn't meet this goal. He should be at this percentage. He should be at that percentage. And so when I started to answer, we got them to sign an ordinance for the district that when families come in for IEP meetings, they talk about what their children are doing. They talk about the goals that they've met. Because I tell you, when I left out of those IEP meetings, I was completely drained, wanted to come and get in my bed and put the covers over my head for 2 or 3 days. And a parent should not have to go through that.
All they told you was the bad. They didn't tell you anything of the good. And exactly. I'm gonna let you other two ladies talk. But I worked for the Public Guardian's Office of Cook County for 10 years. So we would see children with special needs that were also in foster care or also in the court system, and we would see these IEPs come in our case files, and we'd see nothing written but negative stuff. No reinforcement, no action plan to deal with the negative that was in the plan. And then we talked to the parents and we talked to the foster parents, and they would tell us, well, first of all, it took us a school year or a school year and a half just to get an IEP scheduled for the first time. So I see from a public official's point of view what was happening in the IEP, but you guys can definitely tell us more from sitting in the room. So, Tara, what was your experience?
Well, at first, when I first asked the school for help, now, the one thing his doctor did do early on was he sent a letter to the school asking for help. I sent a letter to the school asking for help, and they ignored it more than once. So it took a while, and I think his doctor finally sent, like, an angry letter or something saying, hey, you need to do this. You know, because I need to know what's going on, what you're seeing, because I'm not there with him 6-8 hours a day. Mom needs to know what's going on. So finally something did happen, but when the IEP meetings took place, when they finally did take place, I was one of those trusting parents that took it, because otherwise I was lost. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was going on. I had nobody to advocate for me, except for me advocating for my son. And since I didn't know what I was doing, I was doing a poor job of that, really. So I just took it for granted that everything that they told me was right. Now, it got to a point where I came to realize, okay, this isn't right. You know, like, for example, in high school, it was by the grace of God that he failed a computer class and ended up having to repeat the class during the summer. So while he walked with his graduating class, he was still in school. And I was really upset, but Anita Johnson said to me, she said, you know what, this could be a blessing in disguise, because by that time I had learned a little bit more about the process, and, you know, I was still in the learning process, though, but I looked at his IEP, and I called up Anita and said, Anita, I don't really know, but I think there's something wrong with his IEP. She said, well, this should be on page 7, or what's on that? I said, well, just this. She's like, huh. Well, what's on page 12 or what's on page such and such? I'm like, oh, well, that's blank. She's like, oh, no, that's not right. She's like,
right.
You know what? You go, you take this back to them and make them do this again. You want another meeting. So I end up calling I ended up pushing the school into having another IEP meeting before my son graduated from high school. That's really how I finally got his diagnosis, because his exit IEP was virtually blank. It was virtually blank, and by that time I knew something was definitely wrong with that picture, and I had already decided that I wanted my son to go to college. So I'm like, no, I can't use this for him when he goes to college. Now, I have to tell you, when he gets to the college level, he did not have a very good experience. And I wish that I knew all of the things then that I know now, because there are a lot of things that I accepted that I would have never gone for. But you know, fortunately, I was able to assist him through that, you know, through some of the things. And, you know, Sean is a brilliant artist, and Sean had a fourth-grade teacher, really. And that's another thing. And I think it was Kim that pointed out that, you know, the educators get blamed for things too. While there are times where the educators are part of the problem, because like Sean's fourth-grade teacher, she looked me in my face and said, ain't nothing wrong with Sean T except he's lazy and needs butt whipped, which was clearly not the case because he was never a problem child. But I did run into the situation where the teachers had no clue that he had an IEP. It was because his art teacher called me up at high school and said, you know, things that she was noticing, and she was wondering what's going on. So when I explained it to her, she was like, oh, now it makes sense. And then I realized, if she doesn't know, how many of his other teachers don't know? So I made it my business to go and visit each one of those teachers and have a personal conversation with them. And things got much better for him in high school.
I love it. Kim, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, let's be clear. The IEP is an emotional meeting for any parent, right? You know, when you walk into that room and when it, you know, whether they do the good parts, the bad parts, et cetera, when you're hearing deficits or challenges that your child is facing and you can't fix it, it is a very frustrating experience, right? I can remember, you know, being in the IEPs, and one of the things that, you know, stood out to me was that there's a whole bunch of people in the room, and then they're all telling you progress reports and reports about your child, and you're sitting there, like, overwhelmed. It's an overwhelming experience. And so what I suggest to families, just because I've been through thousands of IEPs now, and, you know, I do some IEP, what I call motivational training, pumping parents up, check your emotions at the door, because you have to in order to get to this meeting, because the most important thing is to get your child what they need. What happens a lot in IEPs is IEPs can become a checklist of, okay, he has a disability, he has autism, so let's check all these things off and write all these things down about his goals. Well, the goals for an IEP are supposed to be person-centered, about your child. And so you have to participate as a family member, as a parent or guardian, because you're the only one other than those teachers who spend that time with them. Because I know Tara and Deborah will agree with me. How many times have you been in an IEP where the social worker never met your child?
You know?
Or the school therapist never met your child.
Met your child.
Right, but they're writing a report about them, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to come in with those own personal goals. So there is a responsibility of parents as well. And as much as I know we don't know when we go in, like that first time you don't know, but that second time you might get a little bit, but you got to get ready. I always say that when you have a child with a disability, it's like you're back in school yourself, right? Because you got to read and you got to do research and you got to study and you got to make sure that you know what your rights are, what they can do, what they can't do, because the only, you know, we're the biggest advocates for our kids. And again, we're the only people that really know, you know, what our children need. And it's up to us to educate even the educators on, you know, what it is that our kids need. So, like I said, it's an emotional experience, but you have to take the responsibility of being prepared as well.
I love it.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry if I may interject. Kim, you brought up a very good point. I'm sorry?
No, go, no, hold on just a second. You guys, just so you're okay. On Blog Talk Radio and Facebook Live, you're listening to and watching the Unstoppable Story Show with the Motivated Moms. Real talk about autism from a mom's point of view. Thank you guys for listening in. We are extending past the hour into what I call the after show to talk more about this wonderful, informative topic from these experienced and highly versed ladies that we have on the show tonight. We've got Deborah Vines of The Answer, Inc. We've got Kimberly Johnson-Evans of Chicagoland Autism Connection. And then we've got Tara Poetry in Motion, who is an advocate in Northwest Indiana for autism as well as special needs, as well as the radio host on WGBE Radio. Not too late to give us a comment or ask a question at 323-870-3764, 323-870-3764. And share this information. There, I know there is a family out there that is struggling with this diagnosis for the first time, that doesn't have the support they need or don't even know where to go to get that support. Share this show with them right now and let them know that support is here, answers are here, resources are here, so that they don't have to suffer in dealing in autism spectrum disorder. You know, I want to flip the script because we done talked a lot about the advocacy. We've talked about some of the negativity associated with raising your child in autism. I want to ask a strong question. So here's the question. All three of you have sons, so I'll just direct it towards your son. But what are their strengths that you've seen as they've grown into the dashing young men, all of them? Whoever wants to go first.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thank you for putting that out there. I am glad that you asked that. Well, Sean is 28 chronologically, but mentally he's probably about 15, and it took me a while to realize that. But, you know, now that I have realized that, that helped put a lot of things in perspective for me. But Sean, since he was at least 6 years old, always had this artist spirit in him. It took me, and I think that's probably around the time that I noticed it, because he was constantly turning his school papers into artwork. It was math, English, whatever it was. He was turning his homework and his schoolwork into artwork. Now, I did not realize at the time that that was probably his outlet for some of his frustration in dealing with the work, as well as his frustration in people understanding him. But I remember looking at a paper and I'm thinking, this kid has to be an artist. And Sean is a brilliant, right now he's an artist. He is a very brilliant artist. And I mean, he's done self-portraits. He's had some of his artwork on display at the mayor's office for people with disabilities in Chicago. And I was so proud of him when he did that, especially because it's so difficult to get him to come out in the public and put himself on display like that. But he didn't fight me on it, and he did do it, and it was a really proud moment. But Sean has also, when he was younger, he didn't have a sense of humor. I had to teach him what a sense of humor was. And now that he's gotten it, he's just taken it and just run with it, and he's very quick with it now. A lot of times he catches me off guard with it, so it's like I created a monster. Sean is also very brilliant. And when I decided to stop answering his questions about, well, what does this mean, what does that mean, and I told him, you know what, go look at it for yourself. You know, so now he's one of those people who does a lot of research, and he schools me on things. And he is a debater. I don't care what side of the argument you want to take. It doesn't matter if he feels that way or not. He's going to take the opposite position just to debate with you on it and prove you wrong on your point, or make you prove him wrong on his point. So, so he's a very interesting character, you know, but he's taught me a lot. He has taught me a lot, and, you know, it's very emotionally draining. It can be. It's very frustrating. And I can't lie and say that I haven't gotten mad with him at times, but, mm-hmm. but you know what? I wouldn't trade him for the world. I would not trade him for the world because he has taught
Absolutely.
Me a lot, and I think he has helped me grow as a person.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Go ahead, Kim.
Oh, I was going to say, William went down to college, and again, just him staying on campus was just an amazing feat for us. I didn't see it, and I think, Terry, you said that you had plans for Sean to go to college. I didn't have plans. That wasn't my plan for William. It was his plan. And the way he saw college, I sent him to community college at Prairie State, and I would ask him all the time, how's college? And he would say, that's not real college. Real college was like a different world where you stay on campus and you know. And so when he went down to college, he became Big Wheel. That's his name now, Big Wheel.
He's
we would go pick him up and he'd be walking down the hallway. What's up, Big Wheel? What's up, Big Wheel? And it just stuck. And, you know, he's a very caring and lovable guy. You know, William's 6'4", big guy. So, you know, I'm pretty tall, but he's 6'4". He's a mathematics genius. You know, he can do numbers. Like, that's his specialty. He loves school. School is his strength. That's what he does. He actually taught me PowerPoint, which is hilarious.
Okay.
Not just PowerPoint.
Okay.
In the sense, yeah, I was like, William, I want to make these things sing and the bells and whistles, and he put all that in there for me. And, you know, he's just great. He's a great teacher, and he's very patient when he's teaching things to other people. And, of course, he loves the White Sox. I mean, loves the White Sox. And not just, you know, the team itself. He can tell you everybody from 1920 who left, came back, turned around, and et cetera, right? And, you know, finally he is just a quick-witted. Like you said, Tara, he didn't really know a lot about comedy or, you know, that quick-wittedness that he is now. But he is hilarious. He is so funny. So that's if I could sum him up.
All right, Deborah, tell us about Jason. What's his strength?
Well, I really don't like to use this term, and I know Kim is getting ready to get mad at me, but Jason's actually on the low end of the spectrum as it relates to having
comedy.
She's going to give me what I see her. But,
I'm going to get it later.
Having conversation and engaging you know, like I hate to even say it, but quote unquote, a normal person. His communication is through his eyes. He communicates and he loves so hard. And when Jason walks into a room, this is his gift. When he walks into a room, he makes people smile. He makes people happy.
Wow.
And he loves church. He thinks he's the choir director. Okay,
right.
But if I can sum it up, Jason's gift is he sings. He can mimic any song. I mean, he knows songs all the way back from the 50s. I mean, the radio will be on, the next thing you know, he's singing all the words of this song. And so I wanted to learn that. He has like a photogenic memory, and he can clean like nobody's business. He can make up a bed. He can do all of that. So that's his gift. His gift is bringing love to a room. That's his gift.
Yes. And he's handsome.
and he loves to take pictures. He loves to take pictures. He's going to be the first autistic model on the cover of GQ magazine.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I don't know now. He might have a little bit of competition with Daniel the Third.
Thank you guys for sharing that, because you know we often don't, and somebody's got some background noise, so if you can just mute yourself for a second and then come back in, that would be great. You know, many times, again, I'm representing the outside looking in, and many times we only see one side of the autism coin. We don't see the other side. And it was only through me working with Danny Randall and helping him co-write his book, Thoroughly Immersed, that I got an opportunity to spend some quality time with Danny, with Daniel the Third, with their family, and see all these amazing things that you don't
see in mainstream. And so that brings me to my question: is how do you think autism is being rep in the media, in TV, in radio, in magazines, on social media? How do you feel autism is being represented? Let's start with you, Kim.
Oh, okay. I was just having this conversation. I think Deborah, you and I were talking about this about a week ago. William, you know, Holly Robinson Pete has this show now with RJ. Everybody's familiar with RJ
right.
from Holly Robinson Pete show. And RJ really reminds me of my son. But what we don't see, I look at William and I look at RJ and I say that they are the invisible part of autism. And let me just share what I mean. A lot of times when people don't see the autism at first glance, they don't, you know, really understand that there's a disability involved here, right? And so a lot of times, especially when it comes to services and support, individuals like my son and other persons who have unique abilities that may not be considered what we say the norm of what the spectrum looks like, what people usually view it as, like the Rain Man and different things like that, they assume that it's not autism. You know, as a mom, I've been even asked, are you sure that he has autism? And I think Deborah, you and I talked about that. And I'm like, you know, who wants their kids to have anything, you know, let alone autism? Well, yeah, and, you know, it's almost in, you know, William shared this with me. You know, what's wrong with his brain is what he asked me, you know, several times. Like, why can't his brain think the way it's supposed to think, you know? And we all have different challenges and journeys on the spectrum, you know, as parents, right? Whether your child is profound or considered to have, you know, some strengths, is a very difficult process because autism is a spectrum, and it's, you know, something that you can't say, well, this child is autistic because he does X, Y, and Z, because each one of them have unique abilities or challenges. And so I find myself a lot of times when I'm sharing my story about William, and especially when I shared a part about him graduating from college, people assume that my situation is done, that, you know, autism is over now.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's not. Just because William had, you know, was able to accomplish that task, he still has some significant challenges with, you know, being on the spectrum. And so, you know, now we're in this transition of working and, you know, transitioned his life to another level. And so we're going into that, and there's some anxiety issues and different things. So going back to the question about how it's representative, we still have a little bit of a stigma sometimes, in my opinion, about what autism actually looks like. And one of the reasons I know why Deborah started her group and why, you know, we have CAC and Tara, I'm sure, with you, we want to present it. It is a spectrum, and we want people to see that our kids are across the spectrum in their different, you know, disabilities and challenges. So that's what I wanted to say.
Thanks. I love it. You know what? And we're coming down to the wire, so I know I can't let everybody answer every question. So let's try to get as many questions out there as we can, and then we're gonna go this way. Let's talk about solutions now. So we've got Deborah, you've got your group, we've got Kim, you're part of this other group, and then we've got Tara, you're advocating in Northwest Indiana as well as the Chicagoland area. Let's go 30 seconds, each one of you. What can we do to really get more information and more help out there for people who need the help who are dealing with autism? Deborah, start with you. What's happening with Answer Inc. and what else do we need to do to get the message out there stronger about autism?
Well, the first thing is join a group, CAC, the Answer Inc., or Tara's group. The Answer Incorporated provides support, resources, education, recreation, and advocacy for families impacted by autism and developmental disorders. We have a Spectrum University tutoring program, exercise and dance program. We do first responders training, IEP support, monthly support group meetings for fathers that have children on the spectrum, and for mothers. And that mothers meeting is actually a co-ed and community meeting as well. We have a walkathon coming up, our 8th annual walkathon at Proviso West High School, and that would be May 6th from 12 to 4. You can go to our website at theanswerinc.org and register. The registration is free, or you can call 708-296-5651. I think I did 30 seconds real quick.
I knew you set the bar high, so let's go out to So Northwest Indiana. You know, I don't know if there is anything in Northwest Indiana. So Tara, we're really depending on you to let us know, since you're there. Is there an organization? Are you part of an organization that
Yes.
with autism in Northwest Indiana?
Yes, actually, Poetic Innovations has joined forces with We Play. That's WHEEPLAY. And it is. It was founded by Jennifer Hudson, not the singer. Have to put a disclaimer out there.
okay.
But Jennifer is a mom of a severely autistic son, and that's the reason why she started it. But we need to raise more awareness about the financial issues that parents go through, because even though Jennifer is the position that she's in herself, her son has about the mentality of a 1-year-old, and is a very big issue keeping up with the funding to buy all of the food that he needs, because he's on a special diet, a special liquid diet. And imagine how much food he eats being at the age of 20 years old right now with a 1-year-old mentality. But I have joined forces.
They have something coming up on the 20th of April, right?
Yes, I do believe. I do not have that schedule in front of me, but I can tell you that every Tuesday, Jennifer has started a caregiver support group, and I think that's a wonderful thing, because you know we have to, we have to approach it from that side of the spectrum too. So there's a caregiver support group every Tuesday in Indiana, and anyone who gets in contact with me, I can definitely put them in touch with Jennifer. As well as We Play. We Play is also in the process of getting ready to open up a resort that is built to accommodate people with disabilities and their families while on vacation, so the whole family can vacation without there being concern as to who's going to watch their child or their loved one, whether or not they're going to have any time, we'll have to worry about being away from them. So Jennifer has accommodated, she's doing things to accommodate all of their things. And even if you don't have a disability, you can still spend time at the resort. But it's definitely made for people with disabilities. She also has Family Day that's coming up in June. That's from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Excuse me?
Spell that again for me. Spell that.
It's W-H-E-E, P as in Paul, L-A-Y.
Okay.
So William, Henry, Edward, Paul, Larry, Apple, Yellow. And
all
you can
right.
go to the website at weplay.org. So most definitely I've joined forces with them, and she's doing wonderful things. And the Family Day actually will accommodate, it's free entertainment all day for families with disabilities. So everything is made to accommodate that person with a disability, whether it be autism or some other issue. And definitely I work with people to help them through the process, walk them through the process, paperwork, all of that, help them find resources. So most definitely,
Before we go to Kim, Deborah, it's theanswerinc.org or .com. Which one is it?
.org.
.org. Okay, I'm gonna make sure I'm putting that in the stream on Facebook so people can reach out to you guys and get more information about everything we talked about. And Kim, so CAC just had their Spring Fling, Chicagoland Autism Connection, and thank you again for allowing me to MC the men's workshop. It was a great time, learned a lot myself, and was happy to support the cause. But go ahead, you answer the question. What is CAC doing, and what more do you think needs to be done to get the word out about autism awareness?
Okay, great. So, yeah, again, thank you, Terrence, for agreeing to facilitate. It was a great time at the Spring Fling. It's our annual resource fair. That was our 18th annual resource fair. Chicagoland Autism Connection is celebrating 20 years this year as a support group. So we have quite a few things in line. And while I'm speaking, I'm going to just put out the website right now. It is www.chicagoautism.org. www.chicagoautism.org. And Chicagoland Autism is unique because we are an organization that is run strictly by volunteers. So we rely on families and our volunteers to be on our board, to support our outings and all of our resources that we provide to families. So we meet monthly, the third Saturday of every month at Easter Seals, and you can see that information on our website. We meet at 1939 West 13th Street, and we always bring in a professional who does a training for our families, and then that's the first half of our meeting. The second half of our meeting is an opportunity for us to network with professionals, with educators, with each other for things that we have in common. I love Chicagoland Autism because one of the greatest things is some of my best friends are in that group. So we always have a great time at our monthly meetings, and we get educated. We also bowl monthly. We have a great recreational program where we go and we have family social outings where we go to Brookfield Zoo, Medieval Times, which is one of the kids' favorite basketball games. We do everything. And so every month we have something that we post on our website for a family and social recreational outing. Our big events are our upcoming water park outing, which Deborah knows all about, where we have a huge picnic in the beginning and we rent out the entire water park for our families and their siblings. And we just have a great time, and the kids look forward to this every year. It's one of our most well-attended events. We usually have over 200-plus people, but the park is so huge it doesn't even feel that way. And what do we have coming up? This Saturday we are doing a Chili's fundraiser at the Chili's in Calumet City. And so 15% of your purchase, whether you dine in or carry out, will be given to our organization to support our continued efforts to bring trainings, resources, et cetera. We also have our Stepping for Autism Party, which is coming up April 28th, and that's going to be at the Grand Ballroom, 6351 South Cottage Grove. Tickets are $20. You can go to our website to purchase those tickets. And then we are going to be joining the Answer, Inc. for their annual walk, and it's Proviso West, right, Deborah?
Yes.
Yeah, Proviso West, May 6th. And then we are also going to be having our fourth annual golf outing fundraiser on June 4th. So we got a lot going on. And if I had to answer your question, Terrence, at the end, I'll just say that similar to Deborah's answer, join, get involved, join a group. We need more people to come out of the dark and come into the light. And we hope that by what we do is sharing awareness that people will, you know, find it easier to talk about their situations, because that's the first step. It's really hard to talk about the diagnosis and what's going on. I have to give a plug, of course, to my professional career, the Arc of Illinois. It's also an organization that supports all persons with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And their website is www.thearcofillinois.org. And I can give you that information, Terrence. And then I would, you know, my boss will kill me if I don't shout out the Liggett Family Advocate Program, which I work for. And that is through the Family Support Network. And it is under the umbrella of the Arc of Illinois. So I think I got everything right.
And if I may add one thing.
Yeah, wait a minute. So let me just, it's thearcofillinois.org or just arcofillinois.org?
I'm sorry, it's arcofillinois.org.
Okay, I want to make sure we're putting it out there. Go ahead, Tara, you want to add one thing?
Yes, there's a gentleman that I work with by the name of Gordon Woods. He works in a group home for people with for young men that have autism. And I'm pretty sure that all of them are over the ages of 18, but he works with them on a regular basis, and he's doing some wonderful things with them, and they actually have outings for them on a regular basis. They take them to dances. They take them out to movies. They take them out on different activities, as well as work with them on social skills and just letting them do things to be themselves and explore things. So, and he's a very big advocate for people with disabilities and especially those with autism. So he's another great person to connect with, you know, for resource information as well as to, and I asked him just last week, you know, can anyone else, you know, even if they're not in the home, can they come and be a part of this? And he said, yes, they can. So definitely. So if anyone who wants to get in touch with me, you know, to get connected with Jennifer or with Gordon or with any of the things that I'm doing, you know, they can definitely reach me by email at the word poetry, P-O-E-T-R-Y, the letter N is a Nancy, M-O-T-I-O-N, the number 41 at gmail.com. And I will be happy to share with you any resources that I have, whether it be connected to school or anything else.
I was just going to add, Tara, that's awesome. Terrence, I'm sorry. I know I took out the, but it should be the included in the Arc of Illinois. So it is thearcofill.org, and I apologize for that.
Okay, so we'll make sure we correct it in the feed so that people can get in contact with everybody. Just put Tara's email address out there as well to get in contact with her. I love this. I love bringing people together. I love the collaboration. I love creating new, as we call, collaboratunities for this message to spread across state lines, and spread across the country, spread across the world. I had the opportunity to connect with one of our contributors to the Thoroughly Immersed book, Dr. Amanda Carter. She has an autism group in D.C., and she just traveled last month to Africa, to South Africa, talking about autism awareness. And she was able to take Danny's book over to South Africa and put it in the hands of men who are dealing with the same issues, challenges, circumstances, just another continent. So it is more than just Chicago. It's more than just Northwest Indiana. It's more than just the United States. And it's more than just 1 month out of the year. So I thank you ladies for what you do each and every day in your respective areas, in your respective organizations. And I think you are all unstoppable. And I applaud you. And the Unstoppable Story Show is open to you anytime you want to talk about an upcoming event or shed some more light on one aspect of autism. So thank you guys. Again, Deborah, tell them how they can get in contact with you, then Tara, then Kim, and then we're going to wrap this puppy up.
You can contact The Answer Incorporated at www.theanswerinc.org, or you can call us at 708-296-5651.
Thank you, Deborah. Tara.
Thank you.
Yes, you can reach me at poetryandmotion41@gmail.com. That's P-O-E-T-R-Y-N-M-O-T-I-O-N 41@gmail.com. Or you can contact me at area code 224-324-5779.
Love it. And then okay. Kim.
You can reach Chicagoland Autism Connection at www.chicagoautism.org, chicagoautismisalltogether.org, or you can reach me by email at kevins@chicagoautism.org, and our phone number is 773-329-0375.
Love it. Thank you. And as my co-host tells me to wrap things up with 90 seconds, thank you all for being a part of the Unstoppable Story Show, Autism Awareness Month, with the Motivated Moms, Real Talk with Autism Moms. That's a wrap. You guys, learn more, be more, do more. Like Tara said, do it even if you don't like it. You are your best advocate for your child. And as always, I want
Thank
you to
you.
Dream big, aim high, and believe in the impossible. And like these ladies, never, ever, ever settle for less when you can be unstoppable. Don't just make it a great week. Make it an unstoppable week. And here's to living your life on the next level. Take care, family.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You.